So let's put Congress on the minimum wage and see how long they can last. Let them try.
I've been singing that song for 2 weeks now. Let's put Congress on the minimum wage. We're joined by Albert Scherenberg, co-director of Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung New York office, and Sarah Jaffe, labor journalist, who gives us Roll Back Low Wages, 9 stories of new labor organizing in the United States to talk about precarity and the report Roll Back Low Wages, 9 stories of new labor organizing in the United States. And good morning to both of you. And I don't know if you heard, but we already had a group of workers on, 2 workers, 1 from Walmart, etc., who are down at the McDonald's in Brooklyn with thousands of other workers. Sarah, get us started.
Precarity is a word that we hear a lot these days because, for various reasons, jobs are less secure. People in general feel less secure in their ability to make a living. That can be everything from the fact that when the financial crisis crashed the economy, we wiped out a lot more middle-income jobs than have come back. So a lot more of the jobs that have been gained since the economy, quote-unquote, recovered have been the kind of jobs that the workers who are on strike today work in. We can also talk about the way that higher education, for instance, has been casualized. So more and more of the people who are teaching courses in higher ed are now adjuncts who make, you know, are paid by the course, don't get paid for any time they're spending outside of the classroom, which is why they've joined the Fight for 15. So we see all of these different trends coming together into something that ends up getting generalized into the term precarity.
And Albert, I want to not ignore you in this discussion, even though Sarah was the major author of the report that we're looking back, Roll Back, Low Wages. The importance of this study and the significance of the issue of looking towards low-wage workers organizing in a critical and dramatic fashion.
Yeah, I think the crucial thing is that it's not just a local issue, not even only a national issue, but it's an international trend. Precarity is the outcome of neoliberal transformation of capitalism that has so sharply increased social inequality on all levels. And at the center of this process is the creation of a huge sector of low-wage workers. And a number of them, and where the organizing is taking place, are laid out in Sarah's great study. But even if you take it a step further, you know, you can show how neoliberalism has been driving a wedge into the working class, an economic wedge that has led to both a sharp decline of the middle class and the rapid growth of what is being called the low-wage sector or the precariat. And that's something that you will also see in an international level or on a global level in the other so-called developed economies in Europe and in Asia. It may be particularly rough in the United States because you have even less regulation of labor here and particularly aggressive factions of big capital, but it's visible across the board. So it's not something that is, if you wish, voluntaristic or that's happening by accident, but it's something that's actually the very fabric of neoliberal globalization.
Sarah Jaffe, take us through what you think are some of the most salient, although they're all great. I've really had a great time reading the report. But take us through what you think we can summarize as some of the impact of the 9 stories of new labor organizing in the United States.
The National Guest Workers Alliance has done really incredible work organizing these workers who are brought into the U.S. on guest worker visas. There are various different kinds of guest worker visas, but the idea in general is that you come in to the country, you can work for a while, you are tied to the particular employer that you get this visa to come work for. The immigration bill that, you know, it has gone absolutely nowhere, there was a lot of push for more of this kind of work. There, the famous case of the CJ Seafood workers, which is a supplier to Walmart, in Louisiana, these workers were living in company housing. It was you know, it's a really horrific situation. These workers, after, you know, months and months of this, actually got in touch with the Guest Workers Alliance, went on strike, and won. You could possibly think of for workers who are still theoretically legal workers. And so when I look at the guest workers, when I look at domestic workers who have long been excluded from labor protections in this country, I see where work is trending. When we talk about precarious work, we talk about fewer union contracts and come to assume would always be there that came about through the New Deal.
You know, I have to say that all the workers that you mentioned within this report, from the National Guest Worker Groupings and Alliance to the Walmart workers to the Retail Action Project, which you look at, the home care, the domestic workers, I mean, these are critical. And what's also so exciting, which you get into, is really the methodologies, which I want you to talk a little bit about, that these groups are using to organize. Very often the formation of worker centers, like we have mm-hmm. the laundry worker centers. Can you talk a little bit about some of your sense of that organizing? And then maybe, Albert, in the limited time that we have left, you can put it in mm-hmm. a context as somebody who speaks from, hey.
Yeah, so we're seeing what these workers mostly all have in common is that they're not in unions, and they're not, at least in the, you know, immediate future, going to be organizing into unions in the way that we've understood that through the legal process, again, which is a framework that was set up through the New Deal in this country. They're mostly outside of that, either because they are legally excluded from it, like the domestic workers, or because it's simply going fast food restaurant by fast food restaurant or Walmart store by Walmart store has proved impossible. In the case of Walmart, proved impossible because labor actually tried to do it that way. In the case of fast food, you know, you take one look at it and say these are all franchises that are maybe controlled by the same corporation, but it's just a nightmare to think about doing it store by store. And so in those cases, they're really taking on the sector in the case of fast food, or in the case of Walmart, the, you know, the nation's largest employer, by going at it piece by piece, with a few workers here, a few workers there, big days of action that are national, which aren't a majority of any one store, but are, when it adds up, enough to, you know, give the company a little bit of a bruising in the public image. And most of these cases, it's not so much about shutting down production. It's not so much about even hurting the bottom line, although that certainly helps. And perhaps is a thing that they will need to do more of in order to win. But what we're seeing is pressure on multiple levels. You see legal pressure, you see lawsuits filed, you see cases before the National Labor Relations Board, you see these corporate campaigns where they really try to damage the image of these big, you know, well-known companies, and you do see worker action in the store. So you see strikes, you see direct action.
And we have about 30 seconds more for conclusion on that, because the clock is not being our friend right now.
All right.
Go ahead, Albert. Very quickly, I just first wanted to point out that this wonderful study by Sarah is available online for free, so you can download it at our website, which is rosalux-nyc.org. rosalux-nyc.org. So you can check it out. It's wonderful because there's so many wonderful studies like the car wash heroes and, you know, the dignity that they've won back by fighting for union recognition and the union shop. And the significance of these movements, actually, and that's what comes out in the report so nicely, is in numbers. It's not just one sector of the low-wage workers. It's across the board. And it's not even only in one state or in the United States. It's an international movement. And this movement, composed of so many different groups, will determine, you know, the future of neoliberalism and capitalism in the United States
well,
and beyond.
Well, that's going to have to be the note that we end on. Although, actually, I'm going to demand that both of you come to Building Bridges Monday night, 7 to 8 p.m. I'll reach you offline so we can continue this discussion. Albert Scherenberg from the Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung New York office. Sarah Jaffe, labor journalist, thank you. And we're going to go out with a promotional. We're going to try, hope it works. Are we, Michael?
Well, Mimi, it looks like we're under the tyranny of the clock, and we won't be able to
do it. Okay, then I'm just going to tell people we're going to see you all at the most momentous international event, really, and certainly the most historic in the history of this country. That's a bit redundant. We're going to see you at 5:30 at Columbus Circle, where all the minimum wage workers and underpaid workers are going to be on strike, forging a new movement of the working class. Thank you for listening. We get ready for Democracy Now. I'm Mimi Rosenberg with Michael G. Haskins. It's been great. See you on the picket line, folks.
Absolutely. Please come out, participate, become involved, get involved, and WBAI, as I always say, is the clearinghouse for all of this information and all of this activism. 99.5 on the FM dial. Please do visit us online at WBAI.org. I'll be back tomorrow at 6 a.m. Do stay tuned. Coming up next, Democracy Now! Talk Mac! John McDonough, Malachi McCourt, Corey Kilgallen at 10.